Hello and welcome to Academy of Cruise. Well, 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 you're listening to episode 15, which will surely be titled A Fireworks Show. Today, we'll be talking about the fireworks that we witnessed at Anfield, and I'm not talking about those put on by the fans, but rather Chelsea and Liverpool. We'll also be reviewing Man United and previewing and looking ahead to the final day of the Premier League season. We are in what they call the business end of the competition, and I am excited to have with me today a man who is ready to talk all kinds of business. Daniel Gonzalez. Daniel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Matty?
I am deliriously excited about this Sunday because I have no idea what's going to happen, but we're all across the table, whether it's Champions League places, whether it's Europa League places, or the fight against relegation, there is so much to play for, and I'm super excited about that. There are going to be 10 games played at the exact, and I mean, I know that I'm not going to be able to watch all 10 without finding out what the scores of all the other games are, but I am any of those 10 as possible on playback or something.
It's sort of like it's a celebration at the end. You can just have 10 different screens going at the same time. You're going to have like TVs throughout the house.
Exactly. Honestly, the final day of the Premier League season is the reason that I need to be rich so that I can have 10 TVs. All running at the same time, all showing a different game with incredible sound system. So here's what I thought. I thought that as part of kind of today's intro, we would do something a little bit different. I'm going to give you a quiz, but don't worry. This is going to be an incredibly easy quiz. You can almost say that there is only one answer to every question I'm going to ask.
Are you ready? I'm ready.
Okay, let's do this. What is the name of the phone company that's sponsoring Chelsea right now?
Three.
Since switching to the new sponsor in every game but one, we've either scored or conceded.
Three.
Before beating Man United in the FA Cup final, how many times did we lose to them this season?
Three.
And as we beat Norwich last week with a 1-0 win, what place did we move into in the table?
Oh, wait. Hold up. Third.
There you go. I'm glad you had a second to think about that one. If we get all 3 points on Sunday and then Leicester win or draw against Man United in their game, what position do we get in the final league table?
Three.
And last but not least, including the FA Cup final and Champions League return leg, how many more games do we have left?
Oh, that's a good one. Three.
Three. Assuming we don't go further in the Champions League than we already have.
I think it's safe to assume.
I think so too. And obviously yesterday's game had, the game played 2 days ago against Liverpool had 3 goals. So it's just been a game and a season of threes for Chelsea. I don't know what that means. Maybe we'll get the treble next year. Maybe we'll win 3 competition, or maybe we'll win 3 games out of all the games that we play. Who knows? But it's been consistently the number 3 has been showing up everywhere. It has led to some horrible memes going around on social media against us, because every time we concede 3, somebody just puts up a picture of our new jersey, and then it'll say, like, you know, Sheffield 3, Chelsea 0. But we're not too worried about that. Onward and forward we go. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are Academy of Blues, and we are a Chelsea FC podcast. We're excited that we get to talk all things Chelsea, including match reviews, previews, news, and a bunch of other random Chelsea things as well. So we are hoping that this could be a one-stop shop for all Chelsea fans. And so we would love for you to subscribe and follow our podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Academy of Blues. And for any questions, comments, concerns, any show topics or ideas that you might have, you can always email us using academyofblues@gmail.com. That's academyofblues@gmail.com. After 3 failed attempts against Manchester United, in the 4th time of asking, we were able to beat them in the FA Cup semi-final. And I actually don't think we only beat them. We kind of crushed them. They had absolutely no chance of winning that game or coming back into that game as soon as the first goal went in. So my question for you, Daniel, is what do you think was the reason as to why all of a sudden we were just this unbeatable team against Man United and we completely turned around our fortunes against them?
Well, I think this game is it's not so much a key or some sort of switch that Frank found that was able to like turn the tables against United, but I was kind of like a number of things. Number one, the fact that Chelsea went with three at the back, it seems like Lampard doesn't prefer to use that three at the back system, that 3-4-3, but when it comes up against a strong opponent and it's a surprise, it's something we haven't played in a little while, it seems to work pretty great. It worked against Tottenham twice, I believe. It worked against Arsenal not that long ago as well. And it seems that when teams aren't prepared for it, it really can catch them by surprise with Alonso and Reece James now running down the wings for us. So there was that. The other thing I think that worked out well for us is that there was kind of a weakened lineup for United. They went with Fred instead of Pogba in the middle, Daniel James, no Martial, no Mason Greenwood. They had to work with Brandon Williams on that left side instead of Luke Shaw, like they've been used to for the rest of the season. And Brandon Williams was not great in this game either. What did you think about this?
I think there was definitely a combination of both those things. You can see, or I could see, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer maybe have prioritized the Champions League than he did the FA Cup, or winning in the FA Cup. Or it's that maybe because he had beaten us three times, maybe he underestimated us just a little bit. And we've been so inconsistent with our wins and losses that he thought that he could handle it, and the somewhat weaker Man United team would be able to dispose of us. But thankfully it didn't. And what I think worked in our favor as well was that this 3-4-3 formation that he put together was extremely offensive and actually not so much defensive. Yeah, it gave us the security of having one extra defender in the back, and that was just what this back three needed on that day. But at the same time, the guys like Marcus Alonso, Aspie, Reece James, and Mason Mount, they were consistently winning balls in the center of the park. And, you know, guys like Fred and even Bruno Fernandes, they just did not have any time on the ball at all to do anything, because every time they had the ball and they looked up or they tried to turn around, there was a Chelsea player on their back trying to win it. And so it was an extremely offensive 3-4-3 formation that he used. And what was cool about it was he definitely encouraged even the back three to go forward when they needed to, because there were at least three times that I saw Azpilicueta just make runs past Reece James on the right-hand side to try and cross the ball. And I mean, the first goal that we got with Olivier Giroud was a product of Aspie going down the line, down the wing, and crossing it. Now, when you think about that being, you know, one of our center backs for the day, or right center back for the day, finding himself at right wing and crossing it from open play, it's pretty insane. I don't see Harry Maguire doing that. I don't see Victor Lindelof doing that, or anybody else who is, or Sherdan Mustafi for Arsenal. They're not doing that. But I think it's that he had the right people playing a 3-4-3 formation. And obviously guys like Aspie and Alonso, they, you know, they played it enough during the Conte era to excel in it for the most part. So that worked in our favor. And I was surprised to see Christian Pulisic left out, because, again, he has been our one consistent player throughout this restart. He has been the one consistent player that's been firing either goals or assists in. And I was surprised that he was left out. But as soon as Man United had to make that formation change in right before halftime and the goal went in, I was like, there's no need for him anymore. Because there was only one way that game was going after that.
Absolutely. I do think that Pulisic looked a little bit tired after that Norwich game. He's been starting consistently. He's been playing the full 90 a lot of times afterwards. So, and Pulisic, I think, is best when he has that rest. I think next season he's been great after the restart. He's been fantastic, definitely our best player. But next season is when I'm really excited to see him, when the schedule is a lot less clumped together, when there's more space between games and he has time to rest. And that way he can bring those high energy performances week after week after week.
Yeah, and it's a shame that they're not going to give out the Ballon d'Or award this year, because now Pulisic is completely robbed of it. Another thing that this Man United game highlighted, though, was the fact that we just have much better squad than they do. Yeah, they're starting 11. They're fantastic with Pogba, with Bruno Fernandes, and their backline. Fantastic players. But beyond that, they really don't have a good lineup of substitutes to call upon. Because for us, we played this game without N'Golo Kante. We played this game without Christian Pulisic. we played this game without Tammy Abraham for the most part. And in the second half, when we felt like we were winning this game and we brought in some substitutes like Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Callum Hudson-Odoi, these guys kept, you know, kept the momentum of the game going in the exact same way that it was going. It was, there was never a moment where I felt threatened by what Man United would do. Of course, we gave them the contractually obliged penalty that we needed to give up, and Bruno Fernandes scored it. But beyond that, they absolutely didn't threaten us at all.
No, and I do think what also played in our favor was the unfortunate injury to Eric Bailly, which I believe that he is okay. The last I heard of it, he put out an update that he is fine. He did go to the hospital for a checkup, but he is okay. So that's good.
You're saying I can make a joke about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if I were to make a joke about it, I would just say that he got that injury only because Harry Maguire has such a big head.
But you're not going to make jokes about it.
No, I'm not going to make jokes. If I were to, that's what I would say.
Yeah, but we're not going to do that. It's a classy show. I do think that that definitely factors into the way the game goes, because an unexpected injury right before halftime comes is pretty tough to deal with. And the fact that it was his center back, one of the three at the back, and there wasn't really anybody on the bench that could replace Bailly in that back three, it really had to change what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, however you say his name. Can you pronounce it for me?
I can. It's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
That guy. OLS.
Yeah.
It really changed what he was able to do with that, because then you have to change your entire plan. Nobody ever really counts on taking a center back out unless they're trying to chase a game, or kind of like, that's really it. Unless you're trying to chase the game, you're not taking out your center back. So it's a change that he was unprepared for, and that led to us kind of taking advantage of that more and more throughout the game.
I felt that our Chelsea team was finally vindicated, because on the opening day of the season when we played against Man United, the 4-0 scoreline that we got did not actually reflect how the game should have played out. When we lost 2-0 to them at home in the Premier League again in their return leg, we lost. Harry Maguire should have been sent off for kicking Batshuayi in his private areas. And he, of course, he goes on to score. And then Olivier Giroud had scored a goal, which was pulled back for offside via VAR. And it was just a matter of inches. And so we had been unlucky over and over again, outplayed them in every game that we've played them, and still somehow were losing to these guys. And then in the League Cup game, that one I'm not too worried about, because we had guys like Mark Guehi playing, Billy Gilmore was in midfield. We really did play our second string team, and they didn't. So it felt very vindicating to beat them almost like when it mattered most, because, yeah, though we lost in the League Cup, they didn't go on to win it. Though we lost twice in the Premier League to them, we're still ahead of them in the league, or at least at that point, we were still ahead of them in the league. And now, when it matters most, at a semifinal in the FA Cup, a trophy that both these teams have been conditioned to win, or to try to win at least, we face them and we beat them, and now we are into the final. So that's pretty exciting. The fact that we've done well against them throughout the whole season, and now I've actually gotten over the mental hurdle of beating them, that gives me a lot of hope for next season, that no matter what kind of team Man United put together, that we should be good against them, that we should be fine against them, as long as we get our backline sorted. So, speaking of our backline sorted, our backline probably had its worst game that it's had under Frank Lampard. We've done it, by the way. So now under Frank Lampard, there's been games where we've conceded 1, 2, 3, 4, and now 5. And you and I constantly make it, at least when we're watching the games together, the most consistent thing that we hear, and it's so specific with one commentator, it's Arlo White, but he says, he will name a striker for another team, right? So I can't even remember his name. The first time it happened was against Southampton when we played them at home. Their striker had been waiting for his Premier League goal for, I think, 22 or 23 games, or hadn't scored that many. Leave it to Chelsea to hand him a goal. It happened against West Ham. It happened. It just over and over. Every time in the opening parts of the game, he mentions a striker and says, this guy has not scored in this long. That same striker goes on to score on us. In this specific game against Liverpool, it was Roberto Firmino. Roberto Firmino had not scored a goal at Anfield for, I think, a year and some change.
That sounds unbelievable.
And who does he score against? Of course us. So this game against Liverpool that we played, it was insane in every imaginable way, because who would have thought that scoring three against Liverpool would not be enough to beat them, right? Away from home. But I have so many questions about this game, and I don't think that we're going to address all of them. But
there's just so much going on in this game. This game is like it's like a movie. It's got so much packed into it. There's like rises and ebbs and falls in this game. There's Liverpool going up. There's us trying to claw one back. It's them going up again. It's us trying to have a comeback. It's Pulisic coming back. And then it's them putting that nail in the coffin of our team. But there's so much going on. And I think you put it best when you texted me after the game to say that was just Chelsea's season in a nutshell. It's just this Liverpool game.
Absolutely so. I think with our team, for the most part, it's been, you know, you'll score one, but we'll score two. You'll score three, we're going to score four. But unfortunately, against a team that has a better forward line and a better back line and a better keeper, unfortunately, it doesn't play out like that. So, first question about that game. Why would Frank Lampard leave out Christian Pulisic?
Really, it's hard to say. I think that it wouldn't have been such a bad effort, because we did, even with Pulisic out of the lineup and him coming into the lineup, we did score three. And with Christian Pulisic on tired legs, I think it was also kind of a maybe this first half we'll sit back, we'll take a lot of pressure in, and then once Pulisic does come into the game, I think he was always planning to put Pulisic in. Once he does come into the game, he'll be running against tired legs. It's Pulisic, he's fresh, he'll be able to make a quick impact on this game, and maybe we'll have some sort of a smash and grab. I think that's the kind of strategy he was going for, where we'd throw Pulisic in, he'll get some shots off, he'll get some cool assists, and we'll be able to like kind of run away with this win against them. Unfortunately, and he should have seen this coming, because everybody else saw this coming, you can't rely on the Chelsea defense to shore up for even one half, because they'll let in 3 or 4 or 6 or 7 or 100 goals, because anytime you run through, it's kind of like back in the day when Chelsea had a great defense. If you managed to get through that midfield, you'd run into Terry and Carvalho. And if you managed to run through them, you still have to face Petrček. And it's kind of like mountains you have to climb to get through to that golden net at the very end where you can try to stick the ball in. But with this team, it's like, oh no, it's Rudiger. And I love the guy. And I think he can play well with somebody else by their side. But since there's no leader in that back line, it's kind of like you just kind of walk through our entire defense. And then once you get through that, it's like it's Kepa. And you just have to shoot anywhere that's not straight at him. And you manage to get a goal.
To me, this game was in some ways, yes, it was fun to watch. Because it was fun to be chasing the game and thinking, oh my goodness, we might actually be able to do this. When the third goal went in, I was like, I think we're going to do this. But this game was painful to watch in some senses, because it really showed where Liverpool got the win. And I don't mean during this game, but there are two specific Liverpool players who Chelsea desperately tried to sign, who Liverpool lured away. First was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and the second was Alisson. And how much better would it have been to have Alisson instead of Kepa Arrizabalaga in that game? And then Oxlade-Chamberlain, he comes in and he scores towards the end of the game. So he is obviously being used kind of like a squad player at Liverpool. And even if he was as that at Chelsea, I would take him over Ross Barkley any day of the week. But the fact that Liverpool were slightly ahead of us in this developmental like curve, in this nailing down an identity for the club and pursuing it with all that they have, a team that's kind of redefining themselves and going after all the big trophies, they're definitely ahead of us. We have been successful for a longer period of time more recently. So since like the early 2000s, obviously we've won more than Liverpool have. But it's weird because we've done it without, at least after Ancelotti left in 2011, we've done it without a real identity, because then you have Di Matteo that comes in, he's got his own identity. And then when he leaves, all that is gone. And then Jose Mourinho comes in and he's got his own identity. And then Conte comes in and Sarri. And now Frank Lampard is in there. But it feels like Frank Lampard might be and is working towards something like what Jurgen Klopp is doing at Liverpool. And so as fun as the game was to watch, as fun as it was just seeing the thrill of chasing a game as explosive as it was, the one thing it definitely highlighted for me was how much ahead Liverpool are in almost like the exact same process that we are trying to achieve, or the process that we're in.
Yeah, I mean, I got that exact I got that exact same feeling. It feels like we're on that road that Liverpool have, where we're signing great attackers. We have this great attack that can rival any other team at the moment in the Premier League, and we have this defense that we're still trying to shore up. We have a young manager who has a philosophy that he's trying to bring in. It just feels like they're further along that development road, and it kind of feels like that. Oh, it feels like that game where Billy Gilmore was doing really poorly, and he was kind of trying to implement his game. But then when he comes out and Jorginho comes in, it just feels like an upgraded version of that same player. And that's what this game felt like. It felt like Liverpool were facing their little son, Chelsea, who was trying to do the exact same thing they are. And what's weird to point out about this game is that if you just look at the stats, it's so odd how similar Chelsea and Liverpool are just looking at the stats, because we had 50% possession, 10 total shots each, 10 total chances each. In terms of big chances, according to this stat I'm looking at, Liverpool had 4 and we had 5 big chances. They had 8 fouls and we had 11, and they had 7 shots on target and we had 5. We had 9 shots inside the box as opposed to their 8, and just all these like measurements are all these stats are coming up at like nearly identical, but they have this display of maturity and kind of knowing what it takes to reach this level that this team just doesn't have at the moment.
That was very, very well put. Let me ask you a question. If you're Frank Lampard, do you invest in a new keeper and leave the back line as it is? Or do you change, maybe make one or two changes in the back line, focus there, and keep Kepa for next season?
I think goalkeeper has to be the priority here, because it's Kepa is like the level of our center backs is not... I don't think it's quite as bad as people are saying it is, because we did play with the same, most of the same squad since the last season, and we did not have a defense this porous. I think a lot of it is due to the fact, and Kepa did play last season, but his decline from last season, from like an okay keeper last season to one of the worst in the Premier League, just in general this season and overall in Europe, has been hard to watch, because any stat you look at, and, you know, you can cherry pick stats and kind of like look at like, oh, he's this conceded shots, you know, clean sheets. He hasn't had that many, but you can't really blame him for that. You can cherry pick a lot of stats. But when every single stat places Kepa at the very bottom, that's when you have a real problem. And he doesn't pass like any confidence tests. He doesn't look confident out there. It doesn't look like any of them believe in him. And there's that one video and clip, I don't know if you saw it, but from the very end of the game, like I think it's the 92nd minute, right before it ends, and there's the corner that Liverpool takes, and the ball just kind of floats nearly right over Kepa's head, and he just watches it as it goes over, and you could hear all the players yelling Kepa, Kepa, Kepa at him after it flies off, and it ends up with a shot that goes over the bar, and it's not anything threatening, but you can see his lack of confidence in all these games, and it doesn't seem like that's something that he could bounce back from. In conclusion, I do think keeper is something we need a lot more than a few new defenders in there.
That makes sense. I think up until this point, I probably didn't buy into that philosophy, but I think at this point, I would happily stick with Marcus Alonso and Rudiger for another season if it meant that we got someone like Andre Onana, or apparently now Ter Stegen is one of the keepers that we're looking at. We did go out and spend 70 mil on Kepa Arrizabalaga, so you never know. Okay, so final question when it comes to the Chelsea and Liverpool game. I think this may not be a question, but I think I've finally figured out why Eden Hazard has been absolutely crap for Real Madrid all season long. And the reason is because he's still playing for Chelsea. What Christian Pulisic came in and did to the entire Liverpool backline. I mean, if that doesn't remind you, Eden Hazard against Liverpool multiple times, then I don't know what does. If you told me, hey, Maddie, you would get to witness this live, but Chelsea would go on to lose the game, I would seriously debate taking that deal.
Oh, man. That's a hard one. That is a hard one. But Pulisic has exceeded all of my expectations so far. I mean, he was, if you remember back to the transfer, he was on the bench for Dortmund. He was benched by Sancho. I think he was benched by Hakimi at that point.
Yeah.
Even then. And I remember the reaction from Dortmund fans was, take him, 60 million, just take him and run. And he has been, by far, at least since the restart, he has been great. And this Liverpool game showed why. I mean, when the kind of like the signings were announced and the rumors were kind of floating around about Ziyech joining and Timo Werner joining. There's a lot of people debating about whether Tammy Abraham would be like fighting for a spot more, whether Pulisic, whether it be Mason Mount. And since they've been announced, Pulisic has absolutely staked his claim on needing a starting spot next season, because he has been, I didn't even know he could do that. I have no idea where that came from.
And I don't know if because they're trying to have less people in the stadiums, they have less cameramen there or whatever, but there has not been one camera angle that actually shows you what he does when he's like crowded by three Liverpool players. All I know is he gets the ball, he starts running with it, three players crowd him, somehow he gets away from them, and then he nutmegs Joe Gomez, and then he leaves Van Dijk for dead. And just everything about it was so Eden Hazard-like, and I'm super duper excited about to see what he's going to do next season, especially considering that this is his first season in the league. And so next season, he's only going to know the league more. He's only going to know his teammates more. He's only going to have even more confidence that he belongs there. And so I'm confident in saying that, you know, 4, 5, 6 years from now, we can be looking back at the Christian Pulisic years and say we've enjoyed them as much as we did the Eden Hazard years. Because to me, the special thing about Eden Hazard was he was one of those players that would make you fall in love with the game, because he would just do things that are just fun to watch. It doesn't matter if you're a Chelsea fan or not. They were just fun to watch. And I think Christian Pulisic has the potential to be that. And I'm so excited to see where he goes.
I think that whatever he did in that little camera angle that you can't find, it's like the Ark of the Covenant, or it's like the suitcase in Pulp Fiction. And you can't see it. It'll blow your mind.
Well said. Well said. Let me ask you a more immediate question. I asked you about what we would do, or what you would do for next season as far as what our keeper situation is. But let me ask you a more immediate question and say, this Sunday against Wolves, do you start Kepa or do you start Willie?
It's got to be Willie. I can't. I personally, I think that, and I don't think a lot of people talk about it, but I think that a lot of performances and form and everything is based a lot, like maybe even like 75% based on confidence. It's like you can have all the tips and tricks and you can be able to do all these fancy moves and you might be able to be really fast or pull off a great pass. But if a player doesn't have confidence in themselves, they're never going to be able to pull off any of those things. And so you need the confidence first to build upon all your skills and talents. And Kepa right now is probably one of the least confident players I've seen in the last few years.
Against Wolves, the first thing that I want to ask you is, what lineup do you go with?
That's so tough. I don't think we can go with a 3-4-3. There's that kind of thing that always happens, that Frank goes with a 3-4-3. We beat a great team. Everyone's happy. We're going to run with it. It's this great formation. We immediately lose the next game. It happens. It's happened like 3 times this season. But Wolves do play 3 at the back. I don't know. I'd like to ask you. I'm going to flip it back to you. What do you think?
Classic Daniel flipping my own questions back to me. I think Wolves do play a 3-4-3, but theirs is a very defensive 3-4-3, and they like to play on the counterattack. And their three threatening players are Adama Traore, who probably is going to come off the bench because he's Nuno Espirito Santo, whose name might be the best name in football, by the way. Nuno Espirito Santo. I could say that all day long. Nuno has been playing him and bringing him off the bench to just be like an impact sub in many ways, what Frank Lampard has done with Christian Pulisic in some of the games where he hasn't started. But the other two players are Diogo Jota and Raul Jimenez of Mexico. So they play a very, very defensive 3-4-3 with Raul Jimenez as the classic number 9 who plays with his back to goal, and he plays hold-up play. And as soon as they're on the break, then they start running down the field, and they're going to try to counterattack us a whole lot. I think that in this game, we're going to have a lot of possession, and we need to turn it into chances and goals quickly. I don't think that we can afford to go defensively in this game and play for the draw, even though just 1 point from this game would secure our Champions League qualification. I don't think that we could afford to do that, because defensively, we are just not good enough, or I wouldn't trust us to be solid for 90 minutes defensively to be able to beat a team like Wolves, who are dangerous in set pieces and on the counterattack. So I would try and play a very possession-based game. So I would go with a 4-3-3. It seems like there's a chance that N'Golo Kanté might be back for this one, according to Frank Lampard's interview that I got to watch this morning. So I would go with a back four of James on the right with Zuma and Rudiger in the middle, and put Aspi on the left. And then my three in the middle would be Kovacic, Jorginho, and N'Golo Kanté. And then the three in the front would be Pulisic, Mason Mount, and Olivier Giroud. William, I actually don't think he's been great over the last three games. Didn't do anything against Sheffield. Didn't do anything against the last four games. Not Sheffield, not Norwich, not United, and not against Liverpool. So even though he did get the shot that led to Olivier Giroud's goal, but for that to be pretty much his only contribution during the game, not good enough. I think Mason Mount has been great over the last few games. I think Pulisic has started them both, you know? And I would put Olivier Giroud up there. Or maybe even Tammy Abraham, though. Because Tammy Abraham does have the speed to beat Connor Cody and the other center back that Wolves have. So, undecided up top, but I would go with a 4-3-3 that would leave Willian out. And obviously, Willy Caballero in goal. Oh, your lineup. Go.
Oh, boy. I think it's going to be a three at the back. I think you just have to match Wolves with what they do. And it seems like that's what every team does. Every team goes into a Wolves game with three at the back if they can manage it with the personnel they have. Because matching up with those wingbacks, it's important to like be able to match up with that overload. If you have Alonso running down, they can't overrun that flank instead of having, you know, Aspi pinned back and playing more defensively. And even though we've kind of gone back and forth on whether it works or not, it does work. I think we're suited to it, but Frank's not really comfortable with that three at the back. But I think he's going to go with it again with something slightly similar. Probably Caballero in the back, Rudiger, Zuma, Aspi in that back three, Alonso on the left, Aspi on the right as the wingbacks. And I'd actually like to see Kovacic and Kanté playing that midfield pivot, because Kanté knows it, obviously, super, super well. He's done it like a million times in the middle of that 3-4-3. And I think Kovacic was great in the last few. I mean, I think he's been great overall since the restart. And Pulisic is kind of outshining him with goals and assists. And he's like an attacker and a forward, so he's obviously going to outshine a more defensive type player. But Kovacic has been doing great keeping possession, which I think is going to be pretty important in this game. Like being able to break up those counterattacks that Wolves can go at, and being able to move the ball forward in a different way than Jorginho. I don't think we're going to need Jorginho's kind of like metronome style way of play with Wolves, and with Kanté and Kovacic being able to break up their counterattacks, and Kovacic being able to dribble forward, kind of bring the ball, move it between the back line and the front three, I think that's going to be pretty important as well to break them down. And then with the front three, I think it's going to be Pulisic, Giroud, Willian. I wouldn't start Mason Mount in this game. Willian hasn't been great, we'll give you that. I don't think he's done much of anything recently, but on his good days, I think Willian brings a lot of good defensive tracking back that not a lot of players and not a lot of wingers that can bring to this team right now. And if we are pushing forward with Reece James and Marcus Alonso, kind of like trying to push them forward and overlap those flanks, if there is a counterattack, I think Willian's going to be a lot more useful in kind of tracking back and also trying to like, if you have Willian, Reece James, and Aspi on the right side, it's going to be hard to break that down with players coming at you. That's what I would say. I feel like you pick a lot of players based on like a very tactical sort of setup. Like you're kind of focused on how it's going to go tactically. And I just kind of go with my gut and how I think they've been playing recently.
And we're both just as wrong as the other person. So it's pretty fantastic.
I don't know. You've been getting pretty spot on with a lot of those formations and predictions recently.
I don't know. But I am excited to see how this weekend is going to play out. For the longest time, I kept saying, like, Chelsea, do whatever you want. Just don't go into the final day of the season with your fate undecided. That's the one thing that I didn't want, and here we are. And somehow I'm feeling good about it. I think it's mainly because I think that Man United are actually going to beat Leicester, because Man United have been doing great in pretty much all of their big games this season, and they'll show respect to Leicester. And quite frankly, I don't know. It's hard to tell which way that game's going to go, but I get the feeling that Man United are just going to edge that one, which would secure our qualification regardless of what happens in our game.
And the great thing about this is that, number one, our fate is in our hands. We do, it's not like we win the game and we could still not qualify. We just have to get a single point to qualify for Champions League. So it's not like, you know, results elsewhere determine our fate. It's definitely up to Chelsea. But also, it's not like United and Leicester are going to take it easy and kind of play out for a draw, because they can't. There's a chance that if they draw, they both go through. But if Chelsea win their game, one of them has to win their game to go through. So it's not like United can sit back and kind of relax and take it easy. They do have to go for this, because there's a chance that Chelsea and Leicester qualify. There's a chance that Chelsea and United qualify. All three of us are still in the mix together.
True. Very true.
For a final thing, I want a score prediction from you.
Oh, man. My score prediction for this game against Wolves, I actually think that we're going to draw this game 2-2.
Wow. I would feel bad if I picked a draw as well. But I already told you what my prediction was earlier. I think it's going to be 3-3. We're going full threes. We're going to qualify with the 3-3. There's going to be a hat-trick on either side. Christian Pulisic hat-trick versus a...
Raul Jimenez. Oh, man. Mexico against USA. Let's go.
Oh, that would be amazing. That's a start. That's a story right there.
Indeed. For anybody who's listening to this podcast for the first time or anything, this is when you will realize that we never know how to finish these things. And so that will be our show for today. I've been Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And you have been listening to Academy of Blues, a Chelsea FC podcast. We'll catch you next week.